Cyndi Lauper singing Time After Time. Time is something when you are totally nocturnal, you spend a great deal of time thinking about. And this weekend is an occasion that I have found frustrating for many years, because for many years I have been perpetually sleep deprived and really eager to maximize the amount of sleep I get on the weekend. And yet still, America has persisted, at least 48 states have persisted in going forward with this barbaric practice of daylight saving time, where you change the clocks ahead and forward and ahead and forward. It's not great for anybody's sleep cycle. It's not great for anybody's health. Now, a lot of times when I bring this up, and I bring this up about twice a year, everybody initially thinks I'm joking. I'm not. And then after it becomes clear to people that I'm not joking, usually most of them come to be on board with it. And yet most states still have not done anything to change this. Well, I am just thrilled to be able to talk with one of the leaders of the movement to put a stop to this barbaric practice. He's the founder of the Lock the Clock movement, which is dedicated to ending these ridiculous changing of the clocks for daylight saving time. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome Scott Yates. Scott, thank you so much for joining me on the radio.
Frank, it's great to be with you. I'm so glad that I've got another follower and another fan and another fellow traveler on the journey to lock the clock.
No question about it. So tell folks exactly what Lock the Clock is and how you got motivated to devote so much time and energy to this and what you're hoping to do exactly.
Yeah, the story is actually a true story. I was sitting at the dinner table one night and complaining, as I had for years, just like you, about the clock changing. It doesn't affect me as much because I'm not up overnight. But I was complaining about it. My wife said, you know, we don't complain about these things. You know, we'd read this book about how to complain less. And she said, we don't complain about these things. Don't complain unless you're going to do something. And I said, well, I've made several very pointed posts on Facebook. And she said, well, that doesn't count. You got to do something real. So I thought, you know what? I could do something. I could start a blog and I could just start kind of collecting what's going on. And very quickly, I realized nobody's really been collecting the research about this. Nobody's really been taking all of the information about how deadly this thing really is and putting it all in one easy spot for people to understand. And so I just started doing that. And once you put all the research in one place, it really becomes clear that, you know, heart attacks go up, workplace accidents, the list of the health benefits, the health detriments just keeps growing and growing. Last year, there was a study that about 28 people a year die in traffic accidents because they're sleep deprived when they get up on that Monday after the spring forward time change. And they go off bleary-eyed to work. You know, it doesn't affect everybody, but it does affect a few people. And in a nation with 300 million people, there's going to be a small percentage that, you know, it really affects them seriously. And so I thought, well, hopefully people start to do something about it if I goad them a little bit. So when I started, there were zero states, and now we're up to 15 states that have taken some kind of legislative action to try to lock the clock. And we probably are going to have another 10 or 15 this year.
So let's talk about what those health drawbacks are for people. So is
sure.
It simply a question of them not getting enough sleep for one weekend a year, and then all of a sudden they fall asleep while driving and do other things? Or are the health drawbacks more detrimental than that?
You know, it kind of runs the gamut. You know, I would say if somebody snuck into your house and changed the alarm clock so it went off an hour earlier than your body was expecting, you'd be pretty mad about that. It might not affect you dramatically, but for a small percentage, it really does. So some people are just sleep deprived when they're driving. When they're at work, there's a lot of workplace accidents that go up. Some people just have a heart attack and die. Some people have a heart attack and go to the hospital. There's another study that came out this last year that I thought was really interesting. They compared hospital admissions for everything on the Monday after the spring forward time change compared to the Monday before the spring forward time change. And hospitalizations for everything went up, like stuff that you'd expect, like the classifications are things like wrist injury. And wrist injuries went up because people are all sleep deprived. they trip and fall, they break their wrist, they go to the hospital. But stuff that you wouldn't expect, like people with kidney problems, the admissions go way up on that Monday after the spring forward time change. So, I mean, it's a deadly change, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, you can't buy, lawn darts anymore in this country because we've decided that they weren't safe, even though really I don't know if anybody actually died from those. I don't think it was that many. But a lot of people really die from this, and it's certainly not as bad as COVID. But, you know, in a world where we try to fix things that are actually killing people, this is the thing that, you know, if there were some good reason that we changed the clock twice a year, I'd say, okay, well, what's the good reason? And we can weigh that against it.
But there is
no good reason.
So that leads me to my next question. If people just tune in, we're talking with Scott Yates. He's the founder of the Lock the Clock movement to end changing the clocks for daylight saving time. It is daylight saving time, not savings. You could check out Scott's website at www.sco.tt/time. That's sco.tt/time. Scott, how did we end up with a system like daylight saving time where you spring ahead and you fall back? What are the benefits supposedly of this, and what are the benefits in actuality?
Really, there aren't any benefits. You know, this is one of those historical anachronisms that we're just kind of stuck with. It started with the Germans during World War I. My theory is that it's actually a distraction, that it was a distraction for the German population from the German government because they were losing the war so badly. And they thought, well, if we change the clocks around, maybe people won't notice that, you know, they don't have enough food to eat. But the Germans started it. People had been talking about it in America and in England before the war, but it never actually happened. Once the Germans started doing it during the war, the Brits did, and then the Americans followed suit to match. It was actually called wartime. So you'd say, you know, hi, I'm Frank, and my show comes on at 1 a.m. Eastern wartime. And then as soon as the war was over, they stopped it because nobody really liked it. They started it again during World War II. And then it was sort of seen as something that was kind of modern, and a lot of people liked sort of fiddling around with the clocks. And so we had time zones changing in every state almost every year from World War II up until 1966, which is when Congress passed something called the Uniform Time Act. And what they said in that bill was, you have to do daylight saving time unless you want to do standard time. If you want to do standard time, you have to have the legislature announce that and do that. And so that's what Arizona and Hawaii did. And so they're stuck with standard time, and they like it that way. And then all the other states have to do the changes. They can't stick with the daylight time year round. And so that's one of the changes people are talking about.
This is very interesting, right? So you have a number of bills all over the country, including in New York and New Jersey, to move towards either standard time or daylight saving time. Explain to us where these legislative efforts to get more states to stop the clock changing, to do what Arizona and Hawaii do. Explain to folks where those efforts are, and explain how that fits in with that congressional legislation, the Uniform Time Act that you referenced.
Yeah, happy to. In New York, I have to say, I'm really happy to talk to a New York audience. Part, I went to NYU and I love the city. And part because New York State is absolutely the key to this thing. Mm. Massachusetts,
by the way,
a couple years ago.
What school at NYU did you go to? I'm a Fighting Violet as well.
That's right. The Fighting Violets. I was at the what we called the J School in those days. I studied journalism.
I see. So, CIS, they call it, College of Arts and Sciences. That's what that falls under. But I'm sorry,
right.
I digress. So why is New York the key to ending this nightmare?
New York is the key. It's a little bit it's almost like a game of dominoes. Massachusetts figured out that they don't like the sun setting in the winter at like 4:15 in the afternoon, which it does in Boston. And so that's a big problem. So they had a big study, a big commission. They studied it very carefully, and what it came down to was what makes sense for us is if we go to it's actually kind of technically weird, and I don't want to bore your listeners with it, but what they actually want to do is move to Atlantic Standard Time, because the federal law says you can only be in Standard Time. So their thought is, okay, if we can only be in Standard Time, we'll move one time zone to the east, we'll move to the Atlantic time zone, which is what Puerto Rico's in, and then we'll just stay on that for Standard Time year-round. But we only want to do that because we're a small state. We want to do that only if we do it in conjunction with the other states. So they're waiting for, they still have to pass some legislation, but a lot of the states in New England are saying, we only will do it if the other New England states did it. Well, I went and testified in Connecticut and said, hey, you guys, you know, because they seem very interested in having year-round daylight time there. But somebody who represents Connecticut down in the parts closer to the city said, look, I don't want my constituents that go to work in the city every day to have to change their watch when they're on the train going to the city and then change their watch on the way home. And I said, okay, I get that. But how about if we make a deal that if New York goes, then Connecticut will go. So if you get New York, then you get Connecticut, then you get all of New England. So New York is really key for that reason. And then the other reason New York is key, and this is not going to be a big surprise to you, is the broadcasting capital of the world. And I have heard sort of behind the scenes, and I've never heard them come out and say it, but the broadcast industry, especially broadcast TV, especially broadcast sports TV, really doesn't want the more sunlight in the afternoons in the winter. They want it to be darker earlier so that everybody's inside watching sports on TV.
That is so interesting. And I've heard so much about all the special interests that benefit from daylight saving time. I've heard about golf courses that benefit. I've heard about big charcoal because of the increase in barbecues. I've even heard about French fries. But if you had your druthers, understanding the federal legislation notwithstanding, you would pick year-round daylight saving time or year-round standard time? And why?
You know, the New Yorker did a story about me a couple of years ago, and they said they used the word agnostic. They said, I'm agnostic on this question. And I really am. Used the word barbarism at the start, and I think that's the right word. The barbarism is changing the clocks. What time zone we land on, to me, I don't really care that much. I think it's up to each state. I think for me to say in Colorado what the right time zone is for New York or for Boston or for Indiana, for instance, you know, it's a little bit crazy to me that Indiana and Boston are in the same time zone. So I think, you know, my theory is we should say, let's lock the clock, no more clock changing for daylight saving time. And each state, especially the ones that are on the edge of the time zone, should decide what time zone they want to land in permanently. And there may be, I think most states, most businesses, most people will tell you in the polls that I've seen usually run at least 2-1 in favor of permanent daylight time, permanent locking into the time we have in the summer. But, you know, there could be some states where it's different. Oklahoma has a bill going right now that says that they won't want to lock into standard time. So we'll see how that bill does. Montana has a bill saying we want to go into daylight time and another one saying they want to go into standard time. The standard time one lost, the one that says that we'll stay in permanent daylight time, is still active and still could get passed this year. So I think it's up to the people of each state.
Isn't it silly that we only have standard time for essentially a few months, and yet they call it standard time when it's clearly not the standard? Daylight saving time, it takes up the bulk of the year. How did that come to be where standard is not the norm?
Yeah, the more you look into this, the more cynical you get. I tell you, they decided to do kind of an experiment where they pushed it earlier in the spring to be able to see what the effect was on energy usage. This was in 2006. And the effects were not really clear, but they thought, you know, at least it'll be an interesting experiment. And also there was probably some lobbying. It's may not shock your listeners to hear that a lot of politicians like to play golf. And so the golf industry was very friendly with the politicians. And so golf courses make more money the more daylight there is after work. And so they pushed it earlier. They were going to also push it to the end of November. And the airline industry said, no, we don't want to be changing the clocks in the middle of our busiest travel weekend. And so they said, oh, okay, well, we'll leave it at the end of October. And then the candy industry came along and said, you know what? For the safety of the children, please, somebody think of the children. For the safety of the children, can we have it be the first weekend of November so that Halloween will have an extra hour of sunlight? And, you know, the upshot is, of course, they sell a lot more candy. But so that's why it's the first weekend of November. That's why it's early in March for us. It's later in March for Europe. And so for people that do business with Europe, they have a 1 hour difference in the gap between us and Europe for 2 weeks this year. So it's all goofy. It's all over the place. And there really is no good sense behind any of it.
Well, I always learned, and again, Scott, is there a more neat, compact URL that we can give people who want to check out your blog at Lock the Clock?
No, that's just it. I mean, it's short. It's like my name, Scott, okay. SEO.TT/time. Or if you just Google Lock the Clock, I'm the first.
Great. So we're talking with Scott Yates, founder of Lock the Clock. If you Google Lock the Clock, it's a wonderful blog, a ton of great research on there, and a lot of information about what's happening in terms of these various state efforts to lock the clock. I'm certainly all for this. I think it's horrible what we're doing to people. But Scott, one of the things we always hear about daylight saving time, and I learned this as a kid in school when we learned about why we change the clocks, is that it saves energy. And even Ben Franklin, when he was first writing about the idea of something like daylight saving time, he talked about conserving candles as part of this very reason. Does daylight saving time actually save energy?
No, I've got a ton of research on the blog, all different angles, all different perspectives on it. And you could make a case that there's a little bit of energy savings, but if you have a reason to want to lock into one time zone or another, energy savings really is not going to be your issue. There are some environmental reasons. It's good if you have rush hour more in the sunlight, because then, especially in places in higher altitude where you've got inversion, you don't want the pollution being trapped overnight, and the sunlight helps burn off some of the particulates. So there are environmental reasons. Also, it's better for wildlife. They tend to come out right at sunset. And so if rush hour is earlier than sunset, you have fewer wildlife auto collisions. So there are environmental reasons like that, but really there's no, the energy use is really kind of a wash. And as complicated as our lives are these days, it's not like, I don't think the thing to save fuel oil during World War I was even true, but it may have been. But given how much more complex our energy profiles are these days, there's just no truth to that one.
Are you optimistic at this point that we could see more states move towards locking the clock?
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be a state by state thing, though. I think the state efforts are great. But I think the main reason that they are great is that they give extra ammunition to the people in Washington to say, look, we got to fix this at the federal level, because there really isn't a federal fix. And, I've been working with the staff of both representatives and senators who are working on this. And they say the easiest way to get co-sponsors is to go to the Senate. One of the bills comes from Marco Rubio of Florida, who's a very conservative guy, and he can go to very liberal senators from very liberal states like Washington, Oregon, California, and say, look, at your legislatures and the people in your state have made it very clear they want to lock the clock. So will you be a co-sponsor of the bill? And they say yes, because I love this issue. It's a totally nonpartisan issue. Very liberal, very conservative people all come together on this. So I love the state measures for that, for the signal that they send to Washington. And then if Washington really doesn't act, then I think that it's possible the trick of moving one time zone over and then saying you're in standard time, that might work. But I'm really hopeful. I have to say, when I was writing about this at first, I was a lone voice in the wilderness. I didn't know you were out there, Frank, so I apologize. But it would have been just you and me. But now, I testified 4 years ago in Nebraska, and the sentiment there was kind of like, we don't want to be the first state to do this. And I testified there a couple of weeks ago, and the sentiment really had changed. Like, hey, we don't want to be the last state in the country to pass something.
Lastly, Scott, I have two final brief points that I'm going to ask you to comment on. Whenever sure. I've raised this, the idea of locking the clock, either permanent daylight saving time or permanent standard time, what I hear sometimes from parents and grandparents is the difficulty that kids could have going to school when it's still dark out. What about that? Is that a legitimate concern for people?
Yeah. And what I said before COVID was, the school should be more flexible and look at what their start times are and really, have start times based on science and not based on tradition. And people would say, it's so hard to get the school districts to do anything. Well, if we've learned anything this year, it's that school districts can be flexible with schedules. So I think we just need the schools to look at what the time is going to be, you know, because it's different in every state and even different parts of the state, and set start times that make sense.
And then finally, Scott, in terms of how this affects people's mood, I'll tell you, my wife, as much as she doesn't like doing with an hour less sleep or changing all the clocks and things like that, she's really looking forward to it not being dark at 6 p.m. Every day. She's looking forward to the increased daylight to go out and do something like run or just sit on the porch. Isn't there something to be said for the positive mood effects of having sunlight later in the day?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some science to back that up too. There's science on both sides of it. You know, there's some science that says that if you have more daylight in the morning, that helps your circadian rhythms overall. And that's totally valid. There's also good science on the side of people like your wife saying it decreases in seasonal affective disorder, more chances for you to get exercise outside, which is really good for your mood overall. So there's science on both sides. One way or another, I think each state needs to grapple with that. But the main thing is to end the actual changes, which is it's sort of like an acute versus a chronic problem. Like, let's deal with the acute problem first, and then let's figure out what's the best chronic solution after that.
Hmm. Well, Scott, best of luck with your efforts. I hope we can chat again, and please keep us posted.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to have a victory lap, because I really think either this year or next year, but I'm pretty hopeful that this will be the last year.
Oh, that would be delightful. Thank you very much. If you want to comment on any portion of my conversation with Scott Yates, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Never forget, in the words of Ford Prefect from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so.
We'll continue with your calls next. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno.